President Biden signs the Ukraine aid bill.
We don't walk away from our allies. We stand with them. We don't let tyrants win. We oppose them. We don't merely watch global events unfold. We shape them.
Plus, Gaza heads towards famine.
There is reasonable evidence that all three famine thresholds, food insecurity, malnutrition, mortality, will be passed in the next 6 weeks.
And later, parts of Kenya are devastated by floods, an alleged Chinese spy is taken into custody in Europe, and a dove is released from custody inside the European Parliament. Today is Wednesday, April 24th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint, Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. A busy day here in Washington as President Biden signs aid bills passed by the Senate on Tuesday night. That story in just a moment after this update on the situation in Gaza.
We all know that we are getting closer by the day to a famine situation. Malnutrition among children is spreading. Okay, we estimate 30% of children below age of two is now acutely malnourished or wasted. And 70% of the population in the north is facing catastrophic hunger. There is reasonable evidence that all three famine thresholds, food insecurity, malnutrition, mortality, will be passed in the next 6 weeks.
That's Giancarlo Chiri, director of the World Food Program, speaking in Geneva. Chiri was speaking at the launch of a report by the Global Network Against Food Crises, an alliance of humanitarian and development actors, including United Nations agencies, the World Bank, the European Union, and the United States. In its report, the network described the 2024 outlook for the Middle East and Africa as extremely concerning due to the Gaza war and restricted humanitarian access, as well as the risk of conflict spreading elsewhere in the region. He says the best way to ward off famine is with a massive increase in aid.
We need that to scale up massively there our assistance. It can be done, but under the prevailing conditions, I'm afraid the situation will further deteriorate.
The United Nations has long complained of obstacles to getting aid in and distributing it throughout Gaza in the 6 months since Israel began an aerial and ground offensive against Gaza's ruling Islamist militant group Hamas following their October 7th terror attack in southern Israel 200 days ago. A clock in a central Tel Aviv plaza has been counting the days since the hostages were taken from Israel into Gaza in the Hamas-led attack that shocked Israel and the world. After more than 6 months of fighting between Israel and Hamas Islamists who rule Gaza, the fate of 133 hostages remains unknown. Aviva Siegel was taken hostage on October 7th with her husband Keith. She was released in November.
And now, I don't even know if Keith's alive. I don't know if he's alone. And it's very difficult for me to think about it. If they're nice to him, if they're starving him, if he's got anybody just to share his pain, his fear with.
Many hostages' families are demanding the Israeli government do whatever it takes to secure their release from Gaza and are trying to increase pressure by stepping up street protests. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's stated objective is to rescue the hostages, but with a latest ceasefire proposal rejected by Hamas, Israel is now gearing up for a promised assault on the city of Rafah, which it sees as the last bastion of Hamas in the Gaza Strip. Also Wednesday, Hamas published a video apparently showing Hirsch Goldberg Polan, an Israeli-American seized during the October 7th attack on Israel and taken hostage into Gaza. The short video, which is undated, showed the 23-year-old missing his lower arm, which was blown off during the Hamas-led attack in October, but otherwise apparently healthy. His mother, Rachel Goldberg Polan, has been campaigning actively for the release of her son. And now to Washington, where on Wednesday, U.S. President Joe Biden signed a $95 billion foreign aid bill that came to his desk after months of legislative debate. As VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman reports, the package includes $61 billion for Ukraine.
President Joe Biden hailed approval of the foreign assistance as a rare moment of bipartisan cooperation on Capitol Hill for the greater good of the world.
We don't walk away from our allies. We stand with them. We don't let tyrants win. We oppose them. We don't merely watch global events unfold. We shape them. That's what it means to be the indispensable nation. That's what it means to be the world's superpower and the world's leading democracy.
Biden said shipments of American munitions to Ukraine would resume within hours. The legislation also includes $26 billion in funds for Israel, which is fighting Hamas in Gaza, as well as $8 billion for Taiwan and other U.S. allies in the Indo-Pacific region to counter the rising threat from China. The package also requires the Chinese parent company of TikTok to sell the video sharing platform within a year or face a U.S. ban. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Now that military aid for Ukraine has been approved by both houses of Congress and signed by President Biden, the U.S. can begin sending arms to Kyiv. Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent. She tells us that Biden and the military leadership have anticipated the bill's passage and prepared so that Ukrainian troops can get what they need as quickly as possible.
The president had directed a few weeks ago, a senior White House official told VOA, to move some of this ammunition primarily because the expectation was that eventually the House would bring this bill up for a vote. And we have known for months now that as soon as this bill came up for a vote, there was overwhelming support in the House, bipartisan support in the House for this bill. I've been told by multiple defense officials that there is going to be an aid package valued at up to $1 billion to try to get Ukraine the much needed ammunition it needs. In this aid package, there's going to be 155 millimeter rounds, I'm told, Gimlers, which is the ammunition that's used for the HIMARS. There's going to be Stingers and Javelins. There are going to be all sorts of things that the supplies have been running low for weeks and weeks. Ukraine has been asking for them.
Needless to say, the news of the bill's signing brings a sense of relief to Kyiv, even as the fighting continues. VOA's Anna Chernikova is there.
The mood in Kyiv is one of relief following news that President Biden signed the long-delayed bill to send military aid to Ukraine, and the country is closer to getting the much-needed military supplies and weapons to fight the Russian invasion. Marina, Kyiv resident. Of course, there are positive emotions. We have been waiting for this for a very long time. Of course, we are grateful to Americans for providing us with weapons. I wish it will get to our soldiers at the front line as fast as possible. President Zelensky expressed his gratitude to the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, all Americans, and President Biden for approving the aid. Zelensky said that this vote reinforces America's role as a beacon of democracy and leader of the free world. Meanwhile, on the morning of April 24, Russian media reported a drone attack at fuel and energy facilities in the Smolensk region in western Russia. Ukrainian media, citing anonymous sources in the Ukrainian security services, say that Ukrainian drones are behind the strike on two oil depots. 26,000 cubic meters of Russian fuel and lubricants were stored at these bases. After the explosions, a large fire started and personnel were evacuated. Previously, the Ukrainian special services repeatedly emphasized that such facilities, which supply the defense industry and the Russian army, are legitimate targets for Ukraine. Also on the morning of April 24, Russian forces launched a missile attack on Odessa. As a result, overhead power lines were damaged and part of the city was left without electricity. The Ministry of Energy reported that energy workers are working non-stop to restore power supply for the residents. Local authorities confirmed that as a result of the attack, a 43-year-old woman was injured and about 30 residential buildings damaged. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Are Chinese spies targeting European countries? Germany thinks so. We'll hear more about that shortly. But first, let's go to East Africa, where weeks of heavy rain in Kenya are causing devastating floods that have already displaced over 11,000 people. I'm joined by VOA's Mohamed Yusuf in Nairobi.
I think from the Kenya Red Cross, they're saying they've seen about over 100 millimeters rain that they were not even expecting that. And it has grown in its intensity and also coverage. And so if you, for example, on Friday, there were heavy rains until over the weekend, Monday morning. And so now also there was heavy raining yesterday, last night, this morning. So more homes getting flooded, more places getting flooded, roads now also flooded. It's been cut off. Some people cannot go to work.
And how large an area are we talking about?
It has covered many parts of the country, many counties. At the beginning, around March, it was just few areas that has received rain. But in the past week, the coverage has grown. We're talking of central regions, parts of Rift Valley, Western region, coastal at the coast, and also northern regions, northeastern and the north of the country, which rarely sees rains. But the rain is also pounding those regions.
How are people dealing with this?
According to Red Cross, actually today they've rescued, the number they gave is 96 people they've rescued in Nairobi. They haven't given the number of people they've rescued in other parts of the country. But what we know from them is that they have deployed about 14 boats that they believe that can help rescue people. They have deployed that. But so far, it's just there are some social media videos emerging in parts of Nairobi where people are on a rooftop sleeping up there because their homes have been submerged, flooded, and they can't access. So they're staying up there. I think some of the people Kenya Red Cross are rescued from maybe from those areas. But so far, people want the government to do more, but the government is still thinking maybe it's not enough. But what we know so far is that Kenyans have been told to embrace for more rains in the coming days and weeks. And this is expected to go on until around May so far. Yeah.
So you said people are expecting the government to do more. The government can't stop the rain. What are they looking for from their government?
It is, it is to manage a disaster before it even strikes, right? And people are hoping that they will be seeing people clearing, for example, drainage, and so that at least some of these waters can get places to go. But that is not what has happened so far. And that means that more rains, more flooding areas. And also, another issue is emerging that people have been building houses just around waters where there's rivers, and they're supposed to go, for example, about 30 meters from the river, and some people have just been putting all these structures right next to the river. And some of these perennial problems now is catching up with people, even those who have built homes. People speak of corruption, and people have been building on top of these rivers, and so some of these waters now coming from many parts of the country, because in Rift Valley it's also raining, and some of these rivers come through those areas, passes Nairobi. With all that downpour, then it means that people can no longer cope with that kind of flooding, and that has been the problem now that is emerging. But people hope that maybe after the end of this, many people will survive, and the government will be able to do something about this so that it doesn't repeat again.
Now, you're in Nairobi. What are you seeing? How has your day-to-day life been affected by all this rain, by all this water?
I'm worried. Just as we speak, above me there's a dark cloud. It means more rain this evening and tonight, and even tomorrow. And you're too afraid to drive to go home. So it means you have to plan your schedule in the office, places you go to. You have to be very careful with driving through some roads because it's flooded. And just after maybe an hour, it rains. And the places that you left that was not flooded, it's flooded when you come back. So it's just a matter of trying to know your way around and trying to reach some of your friends who have gone through some of those roads of past an hour earlier or 2 hours earlier to give you an update, go through social media and see what people are saying, what areas are flooded, the roads to avoid. That is the generally what how we personally am coping and trying to avoid that you don't get stuck in traffic when it rains a lot, because some of these roads may also be flooded and may be difficult for you to get out if there's traffic and cars are not moving.
VOA's Mohamed Youssef is in Nairobi. Mohamed, thanks for your time. Thanks for your reporting on this.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The UK's controversial plan to send asylum seekers to Rwanda for processing has drawn wide condemnation, most recently from the UN High Commissioner for Refugees and the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. VOA's Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The two United Nations agencies expressed alarm Tuesday at the British Parliament's passage of a bill that allows the country to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda in breach of both international and British law. Matthew Saltmarsh is the spokesperson for the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. He calls this a somber day for refugee rights. He warns Britain's decision to shift responsibility for hearing asylum claims and determining refugee status to Rwanda poses serious risks.
The Refugee Convention, to remind everyone, is the cornerstone of the international refugee protection regime. It's a life-saving instrument that has saved millions of lives of people fleeing conflict and persecution each year.
Saltmarsh says international protection responsibility rests with the state where an asylum seeker arrives, whether at land borders or at sea. He says this obligation remains unchanged despite Britain's arrangements to transfer this responsibility to Rwanda. UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk echoes concerns about the ability of asylum seekers to get a fair hearing in Rwanda. His spokesperson, Ravina Shamdasani, notes that Britain's transfer bill was passed after the Supreme Court found substantial grounds to believe that it would be unsafe to send asylum seekers to Rwanda. This includes the possibility that refugees could be summarily deported to their home countries from Rwanda. She says it is critical that all removals from Britain are carried out after it assesses individual asylum claims from refugees and migrants. And this, she says, must be done in compliance with international human rights and refugee law.
What we are concerned about is that this move runs counter to basic principles of the rule of law, and it risks delivering a serious blow to human rights protections. One of the key areas of concern, and as you said, there are many areas of concern here, but one of the key areas is that avenues of appeal are very much narrowed as well.
If the transfer agreement to Rwanda goes ahead, the UN leaders say they fear this might set a dangerous precedent for migration policies. They say they already have seen comments from other countries that Britain's transfer plan might be a path they could follow. The British government has said the transfer plan is intended to stop the flow of undocumented migrants and the smugglers they pay to take them by boat from France to Britain. The journey can be deadly, and hours after Parliament passed the transfer law, French authorities said five migrants died in the English Channel on Tuesday. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Elsewhere in Europe, an aide to a member of the European Parliament for the far-right Alternative for Germany party has been arrested on a suspicion of especially severe espionage for China. It's the latest in a spate of such arrests across Europe. Christy Kilburn of Reuters has the story.
German police have arrested an aide to a member of the European Parliament for the far-right Alternative for Germany on suspicion of spying for China. Prosecutors named him as Jian Ji in a statement on Tuesday and accused him of passing information about discussions in the European Union legislature to Chinese intelligence. The website of Maximilian Kra, the AfD's top candidate in June's election to the assembly, lists Jian Guo as one of his assistants. Cross said he learned of Guo's arrest from the media. In a social media post, he said that if the allegations are true, it would lead to Guo's immediate dismissal. The aide also spied on Chinese opposition figures in Germany, prosecutors said. He was arrested in Dresden on Monday. Germany's interior minister called the case very serious and said if the charges were proven, it would be an attack on the internal constitution of democracy in Europe. A spokesperson for China's foreign ministry told a briefing that reports of Chinese espionage in Europe were hype and intended to discredit and suppress China. Anxiety about alleged Chinese spying has mounted across Western Europe in recent months. On Monday, three German nationals were arrested on suspicion of handing over technology with military applications. The same day, two men were charged in Britain with spying for China. One was reported to have worked for a prominent lawmaker in the governing Conservative Party.
That's Reuters' Christy Kilburn reporting. And speaking of the EU Parliament, a European Union lawmaker released a dove into the Parliament's debating chamber on Wednesday in what he said was a call for peace in Europe and the world.
Thank you, colleague.
All Europe needs peace.
Can you catch it as well?
Miroslav Radakovsky, the leader of the Slovak Patriot Party, carried the dove in a small bag hidden under his suit jacket. This prompted the French Greens member of parliament, Caroline Roos, to raise a point of order after Radakovsky made the gesture, saying Radakovsky had used a live animal to make a political point in defiance of the parliament's rules. Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, said the country will continue to build overwhelming military strength to protect its sovereignty and regional peace. This according to the KCNA news agency on Wednesday. Reuters' Devi Rajaram has the story.
Kim Yo-jong pointed to the U.S. military's exercises around the Korean Peninsula this year, particularly live fire drills with the, quote, South Korean puppet military gangsters as making the security situation in the area dangerously unstable. The U.S. and South Korea's annual joint drills this year were held at a greater scale and intensity than the year before, part of a pledge by their leaders to upgrade their military readiness against the North. The South's military says around 100 military aircraft carried out a two-week-long drill this month. While Washington and Seoul claim the drills are defensive and conducted regularly to maintain readiness, Pyongyang insists U.S. military exercises are preparations for a nuclear war against it. Earlier this month, the North's KCNA news agency reported Kim Jong-un saying, "Now is the time for North Korea to be more prepared for war than ever," citing what he called unstable geopolitical situations surrounding his country.
That's Devi Rajaram of Reuters reporting for us today, and that's going to end today's show. There's more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with the 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.